Today's episode is brought to you by Canby Foursquare Church. Since 1978, a place to grow, connect, and serve. In-person services are back with some restrictions to help ensure everyone stays safe and healthy. For the latest, visit their website at canbyfoursquare.com.
Welcome to Now Hear This, Canby,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
Clackamas Park in Oregon City became a battlefield Friday afternoon, as ideologically opposed factions clashed violently and police declared a riot. Oregon City police declared a riot around 3:40 p.m. and eventually separated the left-wing and right-wing bands, causing the fighting to subside after nearly a half hour of intermittent warfare, according to reporting and videos from Pamplin Media's Zane Sprawling. The clash was between the far-right Proud Boys, who had reserved the park and said that they were holding a voter registration drive, registration is automatic for most Oregonians, and Antifa activists from outside the area who organized through social media saying that they were there to fight fascism. The Proud Boys have been designated a white nationalist hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center and other watchdogs, while its members adamantly deny any bigotry or racism. Antifa, a decentralized movement consisting of many loosely organized groups, is also considered a terrorist organization by many on the right, including former President Donald Trump. The groups shouted insults at each other, with one Proud Boys leader shouting, "You guys are Portland scum. We're from here," while one Antifa member held a sign declaring, "Save a life, kill a Nazi," according to Sprawling's reports. Though such scenes of violence and clouds of chemical spray are much less common in Clackamas County than in nearby Portland, these likely inevitable hostilities have been in the works for several weeks. Lesser clashes have already happened several times over the past few months as conservative demonstrators have gathered for flag-waving events, and anti-fascist activists have shown up in protest. Finally, the Canby Splash Pad is officially open, just in time for summer. The city of Canby held a grand opening for the long-awaited water feature at Maple Street Park Friday afternoon. The dedication ceremony included remarks by City Council President Tracy Hensley, Parks and Recreation Committee Chair Barry Johnson, and City Administrator Scott Archer, who also served as MC. Hensley thanked the city's Public Works and Parks Department for their work on the project and remarked on the importance of advisory committees, saying, "Having the input from citizens is so important to us." Johnson spoke to the future plans of Maple Street Park, which includes the addition of pickleball courts to replace the tennis courts that were removed in 2019 to make room for the splash pad. The Parks and Rec Advisory Committee is also improving Locust Street Park with plans to further expand its offerings as well, Johnson explained. The splash pad will be open daily from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. The water cycles through the structure automatically, giving children the opportunity to experience different features at different times. Maple Street Park is located at 1400 North Maple Street between Territorial Road and Northeast 10th Avenue. For real this time, After a stutter start in April, in which city offices had reopened just weeks before, were first forced to close again because of a new surge of coronavirus infections, the Canby Public Library and other public-facing services are set to open their doors once more. The City of Canby plans to reopen government facilities to the public on Monday, June 21st, on a modified schedule that will gradually progress towards normal based on state and county guidelines. For staff and visitors, Oregon Health Authority guidance related to masks, occupancy, and other rules will be applicable based on the COVID-19 risk sector Clackamas County is assigned to at the time. For the library, the reopening for in-person services will mean the end of curbside pickup for the foreseeable future. Hours will be 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Thursday, and 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Friday and Saturday, closed on Sunday. Available services will include in-person browsing, computers, printing, hold pickups, self-checkout, returns, restrooms, and seating, as well as new cards, fine payments, and reference help. No programs or study rooms yet, and masks and social distancing are still required. The reopening also means the return of something less welcome: fines. Fines and charges for overdue libraries in Clackamas County materials will resume July 1st, so make sure to renew or return the items before July 1st to avoid any charges. Canby City Hall, including Planning, Economic Development, and the Municipal Court, will be open 9 to 3 p.m. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. The Canby Police Department will be open to the public 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. Canby Area Transit, CAT, offices will be open 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, and Public Works will be available 8 to 4:30 during the week. Finally, the Canby Swim Center, lane reservations will be available 6 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday through Friday. Water exercise classes will take place from 9 to 10 a.m. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, reservations required. Residents are advised that this schedule is expected to change in the coming weeks. Clackamas County is offering another $600,000 in grants to small businesses located in Clackamas County that have been adversely affected by economic conditions associated with the COVID-19 pandemic. These grants, provided in partnership with Micro Enterprise Services of Oregon, or MESO, MESO, will be for a maximum of $7,500. In order to be eligible, a business must be headquartered in and conduct its principal operations within Clackamas County and be registered with the Oregon Secretary of State to do business in the state. Eligible applicants must also be either a for-profit entity or tax-exempt under Section 501(c)(3) of the Internal Revenue Code. Finally, eligible businesses must have incurred necessary expenditures due to the COVID-19 public health emergency, including those related to county's return to the extreme risk level at the end of April. Applications are available online at mesopdx.org/grants beginning at 8 a.m. Friday, June 18th, and will be accepted through 5 p.m. June 23rd, 2021. All completed applications received by the deadline will be considered. Any business-related operating expenses not covered by previous grant/assistance dollars are eligible for grant funding, including but not limited to payroll, rent, or mortgage, utilities, perishable inventory losses due to required closures, payments to suppliers, costs associated with reopening, PPE, and cleaning supplies. Businesses that received a grant in an earlier phase of this program may receive another grant as long as they can demonstrate additional need. Clackamas County encourages applications from minority-owned, women-owned, and veteran-owned businesses and child care providers, as well as sole proprietorships. The county, MESO, and a grant revenue committee will work to ensure equitable distribution among all applicants. The county is committed to ensuring fair, equitable, and careful distribution of grant awards to local businesses. For more information, contact Economic Development in the Clackamas County Businesses and Community Services Department at 503-742-7000. number 4, B-I-Z, or number 4, B-I-Z at Clackamas.us. Canby's municipal court is on the move. City officials say the court, which handles city and state law offenses committed within city limits, including misdemeanors, traffic violations, and parking cases, will relocate to the Canby Civic Center, located at 222 Northeast 2nd Avenue, starting next week. The move allows for payments to be taken at City Hall, while future court appearances will take place in the City Council chambers. The administrative offices for Canby Municipal Court will relocate to the second floor of the Civic Center. Once COVID-19 restrictions are reduced, court appearances will be held in the council meeting rooms on the lower level every Tuesday, starting at 9 a.m. At this time, all court appearances are being conducted by phone or video conference. We initially envisioned our municipal court as being part of our civic center when it was built, explained the Canby City Attorney and Assistant City Administrator Joseph Lindsay. This move makes that vision a reality, and we are excited to finally house this service entirely at City Hall. The municipal court and its administrative offices were previously housed at the Canby Police Department, 1175 Northwest 3rd Avenue. To contact the City Municipal Court, call 503-266-4027 or email court@canbyoregon.gov. Payments may be made online or by mail at P.O. Box 930, Canby, Oregon 97013.
Hey James, what's going on with the internet? The Wi-Fi is all spotty.
Well, is it your internet or the Wi-Fi?
What are you talking about? Aren't they the same thing?
Well, kind of, but no. You see, your home or office accesses the internet through underground fiber cables from DirectLink. It's actually your Wi-Fi router that converts that internet connection into an over-the-air signal for all your wireless devices.
Okay, you lost me at kind of?
Why do I even try? Look, you have seen like a box-looking device around the studio here. It's probably hidden under, it's under a thick layer of dust.
No, I don't. Oh, wait, is it that blinky flashy thing behind the stack of old pizza boxes?
Yeah, yes, it's the blinky flashy thing. That's the Wi-Fi equipment that connects your iPad, your PlayStation, and the laptop to the internet.
I bought that off Craigslist like 8 years ago.
Frankie, I think we just found your problem. Your Wi-Fi equipment is ancient. Electronics, they get old fast. And even when new software updates or faster broadband comes out, your old router just can't keep up. It's like expecting a Model T to outpace those new F-150 Lightnings.
Great. So now I have to make Tyler go buy, I have to go buy a whole new Wi-Fi setup? How does he, I even know what to get?
Look, I'm gonna make it simple. Just call DirectLink, man. Their professional grade Wi-Fi equipment is super affordable, and they'll manage the updates and the network security for you. They'll even help you install your new router in the perfect spot to get the strongest possible signal. You can visit directlink.coop/Wi-Fi to get started.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to make Tyler call DirectLink today. All right, joining us on the Canby Conversation today is Frank Cutsforth, the owner of Cutsforth Market and founder and organizer of the Cutsforth Cruisin', which we're also going to be talking about. Hi, Frank.
Good morning. Nice to have you here.
Absolutely. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Just okay. Another day rolling down the road.
Right. How is the grocery industry treating you?
Actually, it's just leveled out from where we were out last year for sure by a lot.
Yeah. People things have stabilized a bit.
Yeah, they have. Yeah. People can get kind of stuff off the shelves now, which they couldn't get last year. And it's just kind of back to normal a little bit. Not quite there, but it's getting there.
Yeah. You have been in the business your whole life. Did you, I haven't found anyone who did, but did you ever expect that we would have a toilet paper shortage because of a pandemic? Was that something that surprised you as well?
Yeah. Over time, though, there's been certain things of shortage. If you look back in history, I can't tell exactly, but I think we've faced some dilemmas before.
Yeah.
Meats, you know, meat and just some things.
Yeah.
Itemized, but so that whole situation was so crazy that it was couldn't expect that. But,
yeah.
But yeah, the toilet paper was really a funny one last year.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
The supply chains have stabilized, as you said. It seems like prices are things that I know that are concerning a lot of folks, consumers and business yep. owners such as yourself. What have you seen?
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. It's inching up.
And, yeah.
Meat has been one of them, and you're just going to see it overall. I think supplies are getting things done. So
yeah. You guys just kind of do the best you can with that and try to inform consumers.
Yeah, you got to watch your paying because you can't say I'm not going to do that because pretty soon you're not in very good shape. So
yeah, not able to get the inventory.
And just be fair about it and do it with a good mind.
Yeah, cool. As we said, things are normalizing a little bit from the pandemic this year, and among that includes the Cuts Force Cruise In. We actually had that event last year as more of a drive-through, and I remember we talked, Frank, by phone, that you were really pretty happy with how things turned out, all things considered, last year.
After all dust settled, it was literally, it worked out good.
Literally dust settled, yeah.
Yeah, we were one of the very few that had a major car show. There was some smaller ones going on, but
right.
I didn't look up too much, but I think we were one of the few in the state that had a good one. So it was beneficial for a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, this event has such a following. Cambie itself has such a robust and active classic car community.
They do.
You guys were coming off your 25th anniversary year that had record attendance, I think over 700. Was that the number?
Yeah, maybe a little less, but that's right. Close at it.
Yeah. And you just felt like, what was your thinking in wanting to do an event, and somehow you just felt like...
Just didn't want to let it go away because so many people were shuffling their feet to do something. And it was late enough in the year and it kept working, and the fairgrounds did a really good job of keeping us in touch with the, make sure we're compliant with everything, and just went off. And this year will be different. It'll be... won't be a drive-through event. It'll be a walk-through event.
Mm-hmm.
So things will be inside the fairgrounds. We stay at the fairgrounds because it just gives us more options, not knowing what we could start figuring out this last fall. And in the December time frame, January, this was our best option for this year because it flexibility-wise.
Yeah.
And Lori and the fair board and all that stuff working with us.
It's a little bit easier to work with when you're not dealing with the city grid and like, okay, what streets are we, you know, are we going to spider this way? Are we going to spider this way? Because you're not sure. I mean, you have some pre-registration, but you're not. Last year, I think it was no pre-registration, was it? Or
yeah, we didn't do it last year.
Yeah,
we did not. But we have this year.
Yeah, you have some pre-registration, but even some folks show up the day of and you don't always know exactly what the show's going to look like.
Yeah, so we couldn't have pre-registration because we didn't. We turned it on and then we turned it off for about 2 weeks because it looked like we weren't able to do it. And then I had to refund money and we started all over again. And so that's what happened last year.
Yeah. Start from scratch with less time. That's fun.
Yeah.
So this year we're back at the fairgrounds, going to look a little more normal. Are folks excited?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we are. People are excited about it, and I'd say we have a lot of support. Like you said, we have some followings around the area that really support us, so it makes you feel good when you've got support. You build relationships over years, and certain car clubs, certain people are keystones to the event. And I'm feeling, we changed our format a little bit this year. We got our online stuff going a lot better. So we've actually probably over 100 already signed up.
That's great.
We're talking in the May, 1st of June, middle of June now. But so the online's being used a lot more than the, but people still have cars. A lot of them want to wait till see what the weather forecast is.
Sure.
And usually August is pretty good, but not 100% sure.
Yeah.
So we'll But we've got the more priest registration we've ever had. So
yeah,
at this point.
That's really cool. Are there going to be any other elements to the event? I know when we were at Waite Park, by the 25th anniversary, you were doing music. There was food going. There were a few vendors.
Yeah, we planned pretty normal. But this year, we've got music lined up. Kissing Good Guys are going to do throughout the grounds early, starting at 9 in the morning. And
nice.
Then coming back with some at the stage area over the fairgrounds. Ray Hardeman and Becky will be doing some Carpenter music.
Nice. They were really popular.
Yeah, they're really good, and they're really authentic.
Yeah.
Then we're coming back with Brett Lucidge, who kind of been with us. He's a family Canby guy, and so he's there too. So we got kind of the same thing as we normally do.
Mm-hmm.
Food will be kind of the same with a few add-ons. I think we're going to have, we just met yesterday, Debbie and I, about who's doing what. So we're going to have pie and ice cream this year. That'll be a new thing. We have a catering guy, Tom. So we'll figure out a breakfast-type menu. Plus
nice.
The Rotary burger thing is the main fundraiser we do for the Rotarians. It's been a good thing. So we're going to be good, and we got vendors coming.
Yeah. I am convinced that your catering guy, Tom Kerr, can do any food for any meal and make it taste good. He's like, isn't that like a reality show where they give you like a mystery ingredient? He would kill at that show.
Yeah, you're talking about Tom?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's exactly, happened today. This is a true one that just happened today. He cooks for a Rotary.
Uh-huh.
So somebody forgot to tell him they have 30 extra kids coming or 20 extra kids coming for scholarships.
Okay.
He didn't know that till this morning.
Oh no.
So he was very flexible, and he's gonna have meals for him, and
yeah,
he's built to adjust. So that's
it helps working in a grocery store. You got a lot of inventory
areas. Yeah, you can gives you some options.
Yeah. Well, the last thing I want to ask you about is just talk a little bit more about the event, the cruise in, and sort of the atmosphere of it. Because I mean, it's one thing to talk about the music and obviously the really cool cars, and the cars are just fantastic. I mean, it's all different kinds of eras. It's not just your hot rods and whatnot, although there are a lot of those, but there's like antique hearses and like really almost turn of the century bus was there one time, and things, you know, but Mater was here one time, you know, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's almost hard to describe, but just the feeling of camaraderie and just the community that event has. I was wondering, obviously, you've been involved with it since the very beginning. If you could talk a little bit about that and what that means
every
to you.
Every year is different, so you're always looking for like the things you're talking about, the Mater and the things like that. So this year I had one guy come to me. He's a local guy out by Langdon Farms, and he's head of a Model A car club,
mm-hmm.
Fords, and he's going to, I said, you come, and we'll, he has their club,
mm-hmm.
They're going to have a, kind of a really good assortment of Model A's, kind of like, and these guys are older fellows that know what's going on, and then their wives, and so we'll have a section of that this year,
mm-hmm.
You just kind of keep your eyes open and ears open throughout the year, and like the Brooks Auto Museum popped up a few years ago, and those guys are struggling. They're really good guys, but they're looking for people to put them on the map, kind of. They have a nice little facility down there. And so Andy jumped in, became a friend of Annie's, and joined his association. And so they're kind of all in for us, you know, and we're all in for them. So it makes them win throughout the year. And so they're in again. And but things like that happen all the time. You just got to be listening and doing things differently and dropping off things that don't work so good. But car guys have a camaraderie about them. I mean, obviously, you see them sitting around our store talking, or down at Gwen's Coffee Shop, and they meet several times a week talking about that's your local guys. But the local guys transform into other friends, and that's what happens. And I've told people this before, I'm really not a car expert at all. I like driving my car around, but I can't change the oil, and I you know, I can start it, and I love driving, but I'm not one of those guys that
works on
can build a car.
Yeah.
But we all get along together.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of that stuff that's universal. The history of this event, I mean, you never set out to have one of the biggest car shows in the Willamette Valley or anything like that. It was just sort of a, it's really down to that local car show community that this thing has grown over the years, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, absolutely.
And sustained.
And yeah. No idea where we're going, but you adjust your business or adjust whatever you're doing where you got to go. And people like this, so moving from our location here at the store many years ago, 27 years ago, for a few years, and then park setting and suggestion from a car club, local car club, and people still love that event around the park.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been going to breakfast. There's a breakfast over out at Carver each Friday morning. This morning they had it, and I've been the last couple Fridays. First time I ever went there, when I was told about it, and these guys show up there at 7 o'clock in the morning and hang out with their cars, and then they have breakfast at 8,
mm-hmm.
and they're out there by 9:15, and it's fun, but that's a lot of those guys come to our car show. And
yeah.
So it's nice listening to what they have to say about what's going on, what they want. You know,
yeah.
You kind of listen, bring them what they want. So
yeah.
They
yeah.
did do the. They do like the park. I don't know. Someday we might come back to the park. And
yeah.
Because it. But Lori, and saying that, Lori's been terrific, and Tyler at taking the fairgrounds, and she's a car lady. So.
Mm-hmm.
Just try to make it work for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. The car show, the Cruisin', I feel is like. Really a Canby institution. You know, when you look at the pandemic and all of the things that were temporarily waylaid, and when you think about what is Canby, like what Canby is, I think that it's a lot of times these events that really stand out, you know, that help define our community.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I so appreciate that. I know it wasn't easy to try to navigate. How do we do this? Like, how many people, how you know, do they have to stay in their cars, all this stuff. I think we need those through lines, you know, when we have a tough year, we have these institutions that are there to kind of remind us what our community is on the other side of it, you know?
Sure.
Yeah.
Good family stuff to have involved. I think they're going to need to do some, the day we have our car show, I think they're planning some more stuff downtown. I just got that call to talk to Tyler today. And so they're trying to do some more stuff downtown with music
right.
and stuff. And
because it traditionally coincides with kind of the big
weekend. Big
weekend,
they called it, and
yeah.
and I don't know exactly. I think they're going to do that again, it looks like. I think, obviously, Swan All Dahlias is a big event. That's their kickoff.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the farmer's market has been doing well and growing,
yep.
and I think they're going to push that more into that weekend with farmer's market and maybe more music at the park.
Yeah.
So.
Awesome.
Yep.
So what dates are we looking at?
August 28th is a Saturday, and our show starts at 9 to 2.
Okay.
Cars will arrive at 6:30 for us, and the gates kind of open at 9. All of our stuff we got going on, and we'll be going.
Awesome. Any door charge?
Any what?
Any price to come in? Any parking fee?
Oh,
or
no parking fee.
Ticket price?
No,
okay.
You park outside. No parking fee. The cars... funded partly. We have a really pretty low rate overall.
Yeah.
The guys coming, but families coming in or people want to walk through, there's no charge, free admission. So get yourself a meal and look at cars and have fun.
Awesome. Great. Well, Frank, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Yep. Thank you.
Joining us now is Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes, a firm serving all across the Portland metro area with 3 realtors based right here in Canby. Donna, can you tell us how Ellison Team Homes started?
I started in real estate. I grew up with my dad. He was a realtor.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a second generation broker, and I grew up with him on weekends. And I learned a lot eventually working with him for several years and then going out on my own. Our family moved to Canby a couple of years ago, but we really didn't know how it was going to go. And within the first probably 3 months of being here, we literally fell head over heels in love with this place. We love the community, the spirit here. The first Christmas at Waite Park, I was literally crying because everybody was walking around saying Merry Christmas and people were drinking hot chocolate, and we got in a carriage ride with the horse, and it was just too much. You just realize it's special here. Real estate's always been my passion. It is my professional love. I enjoy the people, the relationships. So much comes out of kind of the intensity that you spend with people. You're really up in their business for a period of time. And sometimes it's a couple months, sometimes it's a couple years, sometimes it's a lifetime.
Yeah.
I feel very blessed at this point to have people that have been with me for almost my entire career. Mm-hmm. Clients that have bought and sold maybe 2, 3, 4, or 5 homes. I have one client that's bought and sold 8 homes with me.
Yeah.
3 generations. It's a beautiful business. It makes for a very full life. Mm-hmm.
How can people find you?
How can they not, really? we have a website, www.ellisonteamhomes.com.
Well, thank you, Donna.
Thank you for having me.
All right, friends, this episode comes towards a close with this episode of Can Be Then, which is brought to you by The Book Nook, Canby's amazing local bookstore and gift shop. It is your source for new and used books, comic books, audiobooks, vintage books, children's books. Hey, you get the idea. It's all things books across from the Backstop in downtown Canby, which is now reopened for in-store browsing. It was May of 1893. The Canby City Council was meeting for the first time in a cramped, cluttered room above the store owned by city pioneer William Knight. More on him in a moment. The council paid a handsome sum of $1.25 per month for the privilege. And that was part of the problem. See, running a city, it's expensive, and their coffers were completely empty. Their bills at that meeting totaled $35.50, which is called a cheap date today, but back then must have almost seemed insurmountable. The mayor and recorder were directed to procure $100 to pay the debt and cover the first year's expenses. Well, why become a city at all? I wonder how often Canby's first elected officials asked themselves that question. See, a scant 200 souls called the newly incorporated Canby home, and only 63 of them had voted in the town's first election, held a few days earlier. But 15 other cities, including neighboring Aurora, had been incorporated during the legislative session of 1893, and Canby joined the trend. Small or not, Canby was experiencing some issues that incorporation allowed the city to address. Canby already had 3 hotels: the Carlton and Rosencrantz department store, which would remain the city's largest for over 60 years, and several taverns, which drew rowdy loggers from outlying camps. The regulation of spirituous liquors, the best kind of liquors if you ask me, was a top agenda item in the council's first few meetings. Also, even in 1893, sprawl was already becoming a problem, but not the kind of sprawl you're thinking of. This is more the type of sprawl where your less clean and considerate neighbor's junk collection starts to encroach on your carefully manicured lawn. You see, the 24 blocks that once comprised the entirety of Canby had been deliberately and painstakingly laid out when Philander Lee and Company filed the first plat in 1870. But for many years after, those lines and streets were more hypothetical than anything else. The city council spent much of its first few years of business convincing residents to move chicken coops, fences, gardens, and trees so the platted streets could be graded and wooden curbs could be put in. The council had to repeatedly consider ordinances designed to pull reluctant property owners into compliance. I bet you never knew how close downtown Canby came to having chicken coops for bike racks instead of the stylish flowers that we have today. Other early ordinances addressed problems with peddlers, eating establishments, gambling, and other entertainment. They might have had an easier job with that if they had been able to keep a police chief on the payroll. Early Canby exchanged police chiefs about as often as most folks changed their underwear. The $1 a month salary, which was paltry even in those days, probably didn't help. When repairing sidewalks and lighting the city's new street lamps became part of the job in 1895, the council reluctantly agreed to increase the pay to $4 a month. Now let's return to the subject of William Knight, Canby's second most well-known and influential founding patriarch to have an elementary school named after him. His story intertwines somewhat with that of Dr. William Kyle, founder of the German Lutheran communes that formed in Aurora, Oregon, and Bethel, Missouri, William Knight's hometown. Knight traveled west from Bethel in 1863 with his father, Joseph Sr., and four brothers, George, John, Adam, and Joseph Jr. The family had ties to the Aurora colony, but it was never very active in it. Instead, Joseph Sr. settled in Canby on land near the Molalla River. He died in 1872, but all his sons would remain in the area to make their mark on the blossoming town and help Canby grow, with the exception of John, who moved down to the Hubbard area. William was an early railroad agent and opened Knight Mercantile in 1871 across the street from the railroad depot. For those listeners who weren't alive in the 1870s, a mercantile is just a 5-cent word for a general store. In 1875, he built the area's first schoolhouse on Baker Prairie. From 1875 until his death in 1922, he served as clerk of the Baker Prairie and Canby school districts. He also served two terms as Clackamas County Sheriff and was postmaster from 1877 to 1884. He was one of the prime movers responsible for the push to incorporate Canby, and he did his part to make it successful, serving as the city's first recorder and a justice of the peace. He wasn't the only good knight in Canby either. His brother Adam Knight was our first blacksmith and, like most blacksmiths, was also an entrepreneur. He built the Knight Hotel. Should have called it the Good Knight Hotel. Anyone? Anyway, guys, we got to remember, I just read these jokes, but it's Tyler Frankie who writes them. Anyway, this Knight Hotel, it overlooked the 1877 Knight's Bridge over the Molalla River. Yep, shocker there, but Knight's Bridge and Knight's Bridge Road were named after one of the Knights, Adam Sr., who owned the land the original span was built on. The original was a charming covered bridge built by Clackamas County, but it was condemned in 1944 and would be blown into the Molalla River by a storm 3 years later. The loss of the bridge, compounded by the loss of ferry service during the same period, caused inconvenience and isolation for Canby. Knight's Bridge would be rebuilt by the county in 1964, slightly downriver from the original bridge. Adam Sr.'s son, Adam H. Knight, was twice mayor of Canby, a Clackamas County commissioner, and served as the city's postmaster for 23 years. But he wasn't the first postmaster. That honor belongs to his uncle, Charles Knight, better known as Doc, who also owned and operated a drugstore on Grant Street. This has been Canby Then. As always, thanks for listening and learning about our little area's history. We'll catch you next time. And that'll do it for me on this episode of the Canby Now podcast. I'm James Walton. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Tyler, did you know that the Australian lyrebird can mimic any sound that it hears? Even chainsaws?
No, that's super interesting.
Did you know that a baby puffin is called a puffling? That baby sea otters can't swim, so their moms wrap them up in pieces of kelp until they learn how to paddle?
Wait, do you know any trivia that isn't like animal related?
Not really, but here's some stuff you may not know about the Wild Hare Saloon, where Canby goes to eat and have fun.
Okay.
The Wild Hare is one of Canby's longest running locally owned restaurants. Owners Joan and Darren Moden have been in business for 16 years.
That's cool.
Yep. Heck, you were just a baby back then. And they love to give back. They've been members of the Canby Chamber for that long, and they donate over $20,000 to local sports, FFA programs, and civic organizations each year.
Wow, I'm legitimately like caught off. That's cool.
Yeah. They also support more than 30 jobs in the community through their award-winning staff, some of them as young as 18. Hey, that's older than you are.
Dude, I'm 10 months younger than you.
With the days getting longer and the weather getting warmer, the Canby Wild Hare's expansive outdoor patio is the place to be. Furry friends, welcome.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to go check them out just off of Highway 99E next to the Space Age in Canby at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City or on their website at thewildhairsaloon.net.
Now Hear This Canby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website, olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Canby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.